The following programming is sponsored by Pete Trabuco. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Peasley Media Group.
And welcome to another edition of Live on Tape with Pete Trabuco on WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio. The City of Brotherly Love. That's, of course, a Beasley Media Group radio station. I'm Pete Trabuco, and we've got Haley Taylor Simon with us. Yay, everybody.
Yay.
We haven't had Haley on with us in a while as our producer, but really, when she's on the air with us, folks, you know she's a co-host, okay? And she's wearing a nice Phillies shirt today. I'm wearing Castro Aviator.
But it's red.
We're both in red today. And I'm a pilot, so I'm wearing Castro Aviation.
It's the coolest
all
thing.
Over the thing. Okay, I got my nameplate here. I got all my stickers. And yeah, these are when I did air shows.
Oh, yeah, and I see the name.
Exactly.
Cool.
I did air shows, which is pretty cool. But I knew that you were going to come in red today, so I had to wear something red. She's got a Philadelphia. By the way, Phillies are doing amazing. Okay.
Best team in baseball.
Okay, they're just doing absolutely fantastic. And I tell you something, my Mets aren't doing too well, but that's okay. The Phillies are doing good. They're actually in first place, believe it or not, somehow, at this point.
Shots fired, Pete. Okay.
Well, come on, the Braves, man. It's the Braves. They are so
consistent.
But with
Spencer Strider out, there's positives for Philadelphia.
This is true. Now, before we get into our guest, and we got one heck of a guest.
Super talented.
Oh, my God. I want her autograph. I want to travel her all over the world when she's in doing concerts. It's amazing. But let's talk about the Flyers.
Okay.
We have to because you handle the Flyers.
Yes.
I mean, you're in the locker room with them all the time. You're interviewing them, and you're basically having a ball with those guys. Now, unfortunately, it wasn't meant to be this next time.
Nope.
It was, you know, towards the end. What happened to them? Tell me, because I know it's been weeks since the season's been over, but I like them.
Yeah.
Tell me what happened.
What happened was you have a young team that had no business whatsoever being in playoff contention, but they did. And, you know, it's funny, but you look at their schedule and you see, you know, they had some losing streaks. And they just so happened to have their classic almost 10-game losing streak at the end of the season when it mattered the most. So I'm not surprised. I think this team will be in the playoffs next season and eventually win the Stanley Cup.
Oh, wow.
I will host.
Definitely. And I know,
they won't be, but.
this is a couple weeks ago, but we had the last time you were in the studio, we talked about the 76ers, and I said, they got a shot. They're going to be able to beat the Knicks. And you said they're going to lose the first round.
Yeah.
And you are absolutely right.
That team isn't good in the playoffs.
Well, Maxey was good. Okay?
Maxey was. Keyword was.
Okay.
Because he'll show up for some games and not for the other
exactly.
games.
Exactly. Now, of course, you got Brunson on the other side and all the Villanova people who are Philadelphians, by the way.
The funniest part was the Villanova football or basketball account tweeting out, you know, look at our guys go. And I'm like, no, your team that you're cheering for
exactly.
is a New York
team.
Yes,
the New York Knicks, exactly. And of course, they're still doing well. I would like to see, since they beat the 76ers, I would like to see them go all the way. That way you could at least say that the 76ers played the best team, and if they hadn't, maybe they would have gone a little bit further.
Well, you know what team actually hasn't lost in the Stanley Cup playoffs yet?
What team?
The New York Rangers.
Really?
Yep. They're 7-0.
That's right. I think I did watch a few of them.
So if the Rangers win and then the Knicks win, then that means that New York fans are going to be kind of like your Mets.
We won't have that. No, we have the Yanks, but that's not bad. But again, right now, Phillies, man, number one as far as the amount of wins. And, you know, I look forward. And we'll talk Eagles maybe a little bit later.
Go Birds.
But I tell you, man, we've got two people, and we'll talk about that later. To offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, we've got. Let's hope they don't do the 10 wins, one loss, and then all of a sudden at the very end, oops.
You may never see me again. I'm being serious. Like, you may never hear me on these airwaves again. Pete's never going to see me again. I was so embarrassed last year, Pete.
Oh, my goodness.
Embarrassed.
And considering you're on the Philly Fanatic here, which is the top station in Philadelphia.
I wake up at 4 a.m. every day to, you know, talk sports, and I'm like, this is torture at some point.
Okay.
I love my job. But torturous at times.
It is. Okay, Haley, we have somebody that's amazing. Now, you know we've had some big stars on this show. A lot of celebrities.
A lot.
Boxers, you know, world-renowned singers and so on.
Actors.
But we have never... Actors and even astronauts. But the thing is, the coolest thing is I'm looking at this gal and she is just amazing. Her name is Daisy Joplin, and she's a British classical rock violinist who has literally toured the world. I mean, she's been in places that I've only been in the audience for,
right,
and places I haven't even been to. Like, for example, Carnegie Hall, Lincoln Center. She's been at the Royal Albert Hall. She's been at the Great Pyramids of Giza, China, Europe, pretty much everywhere I can think of. And she is just amazing. And she's played in front of 30, 40, 50,000 people in Vienna. And just an amazing, amazing woman who plays, I guess it's the violin. In the country, they call it the fiddle. And I'm going to have to ask that question to Daisy. What's the difference between a fiddle and a violin? So, Daisy, how are you doing today?
Wow. That was such an intro. It doesn't matter how I was doing a minute ago. With that intro, I'm on top of the world. Thank you so much.
Well, you should be on the top of the world. And I'm going to be your biggest fan. I'm going to go to your concert. I know you're going to be in the New York City area pretty soon, and we'll talk about that. But I definitely, definitely want to check that out. And, you know, I don't know if you knew this, but Haley actually played the violin in what, high school was it?
Middle school and high school a little bit. I look at Daisy's stuff, Haley, and I'm like, not as good.
So cool!
I still have two violins at home, actually. But it's one of those instruments where people think it looks so easy, like I did, and then you play it, and it's like, nope, this is absolutely an insane instrument to even comprehend. And you make it look so easy, Daisy.
Oh, and not only that, but we watch the videos, and you're dancing while you're doing this.
Thank you so much for saying that, though, because I do have tons of fans who don't normally go to violin concerts, and you know, when they're like, so what are you doing tonight? I'm practicing. Well, haven't you practiced enough? It's not like that. It's like, even to keep up that level, it's like, you know, an athlete or something. Like, to keep up that level of playing takes a lot of work.
Oh,
yeah. But, you know, I love every minute.
Well, you're absolutely amazing. It's just amazing. We've listened to your tracks, and we're going to be playing a few a little bit later on. And by the way, talk radio, I think I've only had one other artist actually come in studio and actually do music live.
So you're nice.
And I've been doing this at this station for 3 years.
Yep.
And I've only had only one other guest basically do something in the studio or do something. Actually, it was two guests. But that's how acclaimed you are in my mind. Tell me about when you first got into it. When did you start to get into music, and how was that?
Yeah, you know, my aunt, I have a few aunts, and I'm actually really close to all of them. There's something so special, isn't there, about this aunt-niece relationship. Anyway, one of my aunts, she is also my godmother, and apparently when I was 3 years old, my mom told me that, I mean, every day I was like, Mom, I want to play the violin like Aunt Louise. So this Aunt Louise was a professional violinist. She was an amazing teacher. She's still alive. She, you know,
okay,
is an amazing teacher as well. She's like my lifelong mentor. Like, you know, I tell her every time I see her, like, I'll speak to her, you know, she's that person for me throughout my whole life, still cheering me on like crazy. And anyway, so finally my mom, I think she's like, yeah, right, you know, she's three, whatever. But she apparently like took an empty tissue box and put some rubber bands on it and like, try this, you know. And I was like, I don't know, drumming away at those rubber bands. And I guess she thought, okay, this little chick who's 3 years old is like serious. And my aunt lived a couple of hours drive away from us, so I didn't learn with her, but my mom found a local teacher. I started, and then when I was five, I was allowed to go on the music camps that my aunt ran. And, you know, it's these moments. This is what I try to do now. I run a music mentorship foundation. It's these moments when you get to maybe play with a whole load of other kids, when you just have so much fun. And like, because you're doing music, you get all these opportunities. And that's what this music camp was for me, which I started at 5 years old. And in England, you know, a camp means you actually camp. So all these kids, just maybe 20 kids, this was a little camp, but the kids were, I was probably the youngest at five, leading up to maybe 12, 13 years old. I mean, for a five-year-old, 13 is like ancient, and you really look up to them, and they were so good compared to me. You know, I was like, what? I'm playing with them. And then all the kids would actually be in tents in like, we would literally go to a home where somebody's got a yard, you know, with some grass or something, or somehow we come to people's gardens, you know. And so everyone's in their tent, and this is so much fun for a start. And then we would play together, all of us, and my little tiny violin, which probably had a pretty tiny sound, I was suddenly part of this group, and it was, like, amazing. And then my mom was pretty clever. She was like, oh, you don't want to practice today? Oh, what a pity you won't be able to go on that music camp you like. And I'd be like, really? And, you know, so it was help me practice every day. And then she'd be like, hey, you know that other girl who's maybe like 1 year older than me? You know, my mom would be like, you could be as good as that girl. Remember Roxana? You could be as good as Roxana if you keep practicing. You know, Roxana was a year older, but it seemed like a world away from me, you know? I was like, really? And I remember practicing 1 year like a lot and actually kind of getting better. Maybe around the same level. It was amazing to me. So it's like this interaction with other kids. And then we would do improvising. We would like have a treasure hunt to find the notes, like in the garden, you know, where we were, to help us learn to read the music. Because all these things, you know, the theory part of it, it's all part of learning an instrument. And it's all amazing for the mind. And then we would perform for each other every day, which is, you know, another incredible practice to stand up and perform. And anyway, so this music camp, it was fun. You know, I just loved it. And that was really what kept me going. And, you know, years later, like you mentioned, Pete, I mean, at 14 years old, it was kind of pretty amazing, but I was playing a Bach concerto, so a solo violin piece with an orchestra in the Royal Albert Hall, which is like 7,000 people. So, I mean, I guess I practiced a lot and got kind of quite good and
okay.
stuff. But anyway, that was kind of my childhood, I guess, in a few minutes. You
well,
know?
Listen.
Yeah.
okay. What was it like? Okay, now, again, Royal Albert Hall, the Beatles. I mean, every major group has played the Royal Albert Hall. It is the place. It's like Carnegie Hall in the United States. What was that like to play play the Royal Albert Hall? And was it better than Carnegie or any of the others in the States?
Well, look, it's all a different time of life, you know, so I wouldn't say it's better than Carnegie, definitely not. But what was so interesting, and I remember telling everybody that night, like, I was so nervous at least the week before. I mean, like, I thought I'm going to be vomiting or something. Like, I was nervous. And even coming up, like, even backstage, I'm like, oh, my God, you know, just thinking about going on stage for 7,000 people. But I stepped out onto the stage. And I feel like something was lifting me. And I tell everybody, you know, the spirits of all those great artists who played there. But anyway, it's like the piece lasts maybe like 15 minutes. It wasn't a long, like, concerto, but it felt like it went in 2 seconds. And I felt like I was just flying. And then I was like, you know, got to the end and the applause, and I'm like, it's over. Like, what just, you know, it was kind of an amazing, nearly transcendental experience, you know, but definitely I really enjoyed it. But when I got off the stage, so the Royal Albert Hall is round. And when you come out of the stage and you come into your dressing room, I wanted to go and find my family. And, you know, the other, I guess, musicians were carrying on playing, and I'd kind of finish my part. And so I was like, let me go into this corridor. And there's like, I can't remember, 300 rooms, you know, off to all the sides. And I just completely got lost in this place, probably because I was so like hyped up after this experience. And I remember just walking around going, oh my God. And I was supposed to get together in the last piece with all the musicians, and I was lost. I didn't even come on stage again for the end.
Oh my goodness.
I mean,
gracious.
I found them after, but anyway, just to say, I was probably so like just nearly out of it, you know. But I will never forget how I thought, wow, I want to perform. Like, that experience made me realize, even if I still get nervous, like all these years later, I'm still so nervous, you know, leading up to the show. But when I got on stage, it's like, it's a kind of letting go and letting God, you know, you kind of let the music flood through you. And like you said, it looks like I'm dancing. I don't know any of this stuff I'm doing. I'm just literally letting the music take over, which is an amazing feeling. And I feel like that experience connects me really deeply with the audience, because all of us are kind of coming out of like the everyday problems or stuff, and we're just all flying in this realm of amazing music.
Well, that is so amazing. And for folks that just joined us, we are talking with British classical rock violinist who's toured the entire world, Daisy Joplin, and we'll be back with Live on Tape right after this. Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeVac can stop these senseless tragedies. And it's so easy to use as well. Simply place the mask over the face and push and pull. You'll never regret having a LifeVac in your home or office. Please visit their website at www.lifevac.net today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFEVAC. That's 877-LIFEVAC. Back with Live on Tape right here at WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio, a Beasley Media Group radio station. Pete Tribuco here with the lovely and talented, and she's also a violin player herself, Haley Taylor Simon, and we have got an amazing guest. But before we talk about our guest, I want to talk about World Star Public Relations, where excellence meets exposure. Now, are you ready to elevate your brand to new heights? Well, their team of dynamic PR experts is here to make your story shine bright on the global stage. Whether you're a startup, an established artist, business, or a rising star, we specialize in crafting narratives. And when I mean crafting narratives, I mean specializing in campaigns that resonate. So World Star PR, your passport to the world of unparalleled visibility and success. So join the ranks of those who've already made headlines. Choose World Star Public Relations and let your story take center stage. That number is 631-506-6600. That's 631-506-6600. Boy, I sound like a DJ when I do that.
You do. You got to call up.
That's right. That's the old way to, the old way to do it. So, of course, we've got Daisy Joplin with us, British classical rock violinist. Okay, now, Carnegie Hall, Lincoln Center, the Edinburgh Festival, the Great Pyramids of Giza, and I'm just mentioning a few, Royal Albert Hall, China, Europe, and you've worked with Bobby McFadden as well. Tell me about your work with Bobby. How was that? Was that fun, Daisy?
Oh, and there were things. So Bobby McFerrin, yeah, there were stories that happened during our, we did a little tiny tour, like a couple of performances, I think, with him.
Okay.
That I will never forget. So basically it was, some years ago, and we were playing a concert in Mexico, and I was in a string trio. So it was Bobby McFerrin and my string trio, two violin players and the cellist.
Okay.
And we were living in Vienna at that time. And, we said, because Bobby is a genius in every way, but like a genius improviser. And we all came from being classically trained musicians. Not that we hadn't done some improvising, but we pretty much told him, Bobby, we are not jazz musicians. Like, we don't want to be like put in some situation where we're suddenly improvising something, because it's not really like our forte and everything. He's like, he didn't maybe really answer. I can't really remember what he said, but we got on stage and the whole thing was, I think he did some solo stuff first, these amazing where he's using his voice to create like all the instruments of an orchestra or something. So he did his part and then we came on and played some of our music like without him. And then we started collaborating and we'd done arrangements of some of his songs and we were playing some of that. And anyway, we got to like third, fourth song. And a couple of things. First of all, he suddenly went, oh, and now we're going to improvise an opera. Literally. Me and the other two musicians are going, oh, like the whole audience is there. And so like, are you kidding me? And something about, well, we had to do it.
Yep.
And something about like, he is so powerfully comfortable in like these totally improvised situations. And we were just on the spot. And I remember the cellist starting with some, kind of accompanying kind of groove. And then I think the other volunteers came in. I came with, Bobby was brilliant and funny. And we improvised this piece. Like, I was so blown away by having done it. So that was awesome. And, you know, I'm still trying to be that person who, you know, puts myself in uncomfortable positions, and I'm still, you know, scared, all this stuff. But anyway, he really showed me that. And another thing was that we told him, and Bobby, the other thing is, like, we have done these, like, arrangements that were, you know, of his songs,
uh-huh,
that we're reading the music. Like, we got sheet music in front of us. We're going section A, it goes to section blah, blah, you know. And we've noticed that on different recordings, he'd sometimes recorded the same piece again or maybe in a live performance,
okay,
and, you know, totally changed up the form. So we're like, Bobby, this is the form we're doing. Like, if you go off on some other place, we're not going to be kind of with you, you know. He's like, okay, fine. He looked it over. Okay, good. So we get on stage, and, you know, we've done a few numbers and blah. And I think this was like before we, it might have been another show or maybe before we got to the opera part. Anyway, we're playing this song. The audience is going great. Audience is going crazy. It's like we're loving it. And then we get to this part of the song where, you know, our music, our sheet music is saying you're going onto this section. And he starts on a whole other section.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't know where he is. Like, we can't just jump to where he is. We're like, I'm remembering being in my seat, and I was like, within the three of them in the middle, you know, I was like, I need a hole in the stage right now. I'm like, I didn't know what to do. I was in panic mode, you know, looking at the other musicians. And you know, after, of course, probably a few seconds, like a very short time, Bobby realized, you know, and he turned around on us, and he didn't suddenly like jump to the place we were playing or something. He just thought it was funny. And he literally got the giggles on stage. He just couldn't stop laughing. And we had to just stop, you know. And then, so, of course, we started laughing as well. And then, you know, he's like, okay, let's go from section A or, you know, B or C, whatever, and we play to the rest of the song. But I never forgot the fact that in the same scenario, I was ready to die of mortification, and he thought it was funny.
Okay, so that brings up a good question now. Yeah, I've been on stage. I've done off-Broadway stuff, and I tell you, people lose lines. They forget their lines. They get into, you know, the whatever we call the yips or whatever happens. And you literally feel like you're dying on stage. But now here you are with Bobby McFerrin on stage, okay, in front of all these people, and he's all over the place. And it's like, it's kind of like, did you ever watch, what was that, Back to the Future, when he's playing the guitar and he goes off on the riff and everything, and everybody's like, well, your children are going to love it. You know, you're not going to love it, but your children are going to love it. So it's probably like that too. He's like, well, you know, I'm a little off stage there, but I'm glad you guys kept going. You had fun with it, and that's what it's all about. It's all about having fun on stage, and you guys are pros, so you guys could cover that stuff up and make it look like it was part of the act and so on.
That's probably what they thought. They probably thought you're absolutely right.
Yeah, well, that's because you're great. Now
that's,
I know,
what professionals do.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, that's professional. I'm not a professional, but Haley's a professional. Okay.
Oh, Haley.
I mean,
he's saying a lot of good things.
I mean, she's the coolest. I mean, I'll tell you one thing. When you're in the New York, Philadelphia area, you let us know.
Yeah.
And we'll be there. Haley will bring her violin.
I'm not good.
And she'll play for you.
No, it's not good at all. I can promise you that. I need to rosin up the bow a little bit.
But, okay, so the violin is a very, very difficult instrument to play, and you've mastered it. In fact, you got a special one, too. Tell us about the type of violin that you actually do use.
Yeah, so my violin, it's made in 1778, which,
wow,
is very cool because, you know, the Constitution of the United States was signed kind of 1776, but apparently there was a law signature, I don't know, added in 1778. I better check that,
yeah,
out. But anyway, I've been told that. So it's about the same age as the States. And it was made in Italy, in Livorno, which is kind of northern-ish Italy, and by a guy called Antonio Graniani. But what is very cool, not only is it a stunningly gorgeous violin, but it's going to have its 250th anniversary in, you know, pretty soon, 2028.
Okay.
So at that year, just for all the listeners to start putting in the back of their minds, we're going to do a big concert in Italy to really celebrate this amazing feat of my violin turning 250 years,
wow,
old. A big concert, maybe Verona Arena or something. So anyway, but the story as well of this violin is amazing because my dad bought it for a few thousand pounds. Not that that was nothing. I was a little tiny kid and I was probably playing the violin, but I wasn't sure I would be a professional violinist, but he was told that you spend, you know, a few thousand on this violin, you're going to make a lot of money. So he loved music. He wasn't a musician, but he decided, okay, I'm going to follow this person's advice. And since that time, so the violin, my dad probably bought it like 50 years ago, something like that, and maybe 45 years ago. And since then, I don't know if I should say the price on the radio, but like, let me tell you, it's made a lot of money. Because violins back then didn't used to be so, so expensive. And, my violin's worth a lot of money, but like, you can get Stradivarius violins for like, I don't know, $10 million, $18 million. I think one just sold for $18 or $16
really?
Million
wow.
for one violin. Mine's not worth that kind of money, but it's still a lot.
Well, listen, you know, obviously your violin is worth a lot because in addition to the violin, they get you and they get you dancing around. So,
the talent.
I mean, seriously. I mean, I think that's worth $18 million. What do you think?
And Daisy, I have a quick question for you, too. So Pete actually just mentioned about how you dance around, too, while playing the violin, and we saw the videos. When did you get into that? Besides mastering the violin, when did you get into all the showmanship when playing the violin?
That's such a good question because, you know, it didn't happen like, oh, now I'm going to learn this. Or, you know, like there's an amazing violinist out there who learn dance moves while they play, which I don't do that. But what started happening, I've trained totally classically. But actually, even as a kid, I really wanted to like write my own music. I wanted to play styles from different places around the world. But I, you know, my family who are amazing, but they're very like, Western classical music is the best music for a child's brain. You know, I wasn't really allowed, literally I wasn't allowed with any other music. And I just had to play this music. But as soon as I left home, which was 17 years old, and I went to the Royal College of Music, kind of like the Juilliard of London in a way, you know, and I was studying there, but after being in London, suddenly from growing up in the countryside, I was suddenly exposed to other music and I was able to meet other musicians. I remember meeting an African drummer from Nigeria and joining his band and then, you know, starting to learn a little bit of Irish folk music and like different, you know, and it was playing these other styles of music, even starting to improvise, that kind of freed me physically as well. Like I was able to, I don't know, just have much more freedom in my playing. And so it happened really slowly and really organically that I don't even know that I do dance around on stage. All I'm doing is having fun, you know, and feeling the music. But it was interesting. And I actually had this really interesting moment. You know how there are moments that are kind of paradigm shifts for us in our lives. And
sure.
I had this offer from a friend to go to Vienna, Austria, and have some lessons with this amazing violinist who persuaded me to go and study with him for 6 months. And I found two other musicians who were like me, like they were classically trained, but they really wanted to kind of write their own music and play different styles of music. And we decided to hang out in the evenings and like, you know, arrange all this music we loved, whether it was flamenco or tango or African rainforest music or like all kinds of stuff. And we decided to put on a little concert in a cafe, and unbeknownst to us, the guy in charge of finding artists to BMG, which is one of the biggest record labels, I mean, especially it was back then in the world, he came to our concert. I mean, he kind of heard about us doing this stuff. I don't know, a friend of his told him, whatever, who was a friend of ours, I think. And he came and he said, I want to sign you to BMG, which suddenly was massive because, you know, even though I'd wanted to play different music, it never occurred to me that I could live, you know, financially, like professionally, be a professional musician playing other music than classical. And in this one moment, it all became possible. I didn't even say yes straight away. I went back to England and I was like, wait a minute, I think I should try this. And I came back to Vienna and we signed about a year later to BMG. And then I even went to, you know, Africa and learned grooving, you know, we learned to play the drums. And anyway,
wow.
All of that, I think, led to this kind of, you know, freedom while I play of just jumping around and enjoying it, you know?
Well, good for you. Well, for those of you just joining us, we are talking with British classical rock violinist. It's toward the world, all over the world, and her name is Daisy Joplin, and we'll be back with Live on Tape right after these messages. Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeVac can stop these senseless tragedies. And it's so easy to use as well. Simply place the mask over the face and push and pull. You'll never regret having a LifeVac in your home or office. Please visit their website at www.lifevac.net today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFEVAC. That's 877-LIFEVAC. Welcome back to Live on Tape with Pete Dubuco right here in Philadelphia on WWDB, AM 860 Talk Radio with Haley. And we're just having an amazing time here. Fantastic guest, Daisy Joplin, British classical rock violinist who's toured the world. And she's actually played Carnegie Hall, Lincoln Center, the Edinburgh Festival, the Pyramids of Giza, Royal Albert Hall, of course, China, Europe, and has actually been hanging out and playing music with Bobby McFerrin, which is an interesting story as well. But, you know, she's also got albums. Daisy, you got some great albums, okay? There are four of them to begin with. So we got about a minute. Tell us about the albums, and then I'm going to play one song, or two actually, from different albums that you have. One from the past and one that's coming out. So talk to me about the albums. When did that come? When you obviously got the record deal, I guess, at that point, right?
Yes. So, you know, I've recorded actually 9 altogether, and I'm just about next Tuesday to start recording my next one. So anyway.
Wow, so 9? I'm sorry.
Yes, the first few were with BMG and with this string trio, which is, or was, we're not together now, called Triology. So like trio and then logy, Triology.
I like that.
Yeah, it's really cool. And then we were together like nearly 13 years and had an amazing time, but kind of wanted to do something else. And then I started working with an incredible Cuban singer. I've always been so in love with Cuban music. And we had a duo called Son Dos, which has a few different meanings. It means the sound of two, and also we are two. So anyway, and we did an album called Mañana Mi Amor, which means tomorrow, my love, but more. Anyway, it has a lot of meanings, and that's okay. A beautiful album as well. That was the fourth one. And then when I came to the U.S., so I just started when that group, when we did a few years of that, and then I wanted to do something else, and I just started to get a lot of work in New York City. And I thought, I'll come for a year, and here I am. 18 years later.
Oh, wow.
So the first album, I wanted to go back to my classical roots at that point in my career, which was, you know, years after I'd been playing all these other styles of music and writing my own music and stuff like that. And I wanted to create a new spin on it. And I teamed up with an awesome producer in New York City called Bojan Dujic, really interesting guy from, Serbia. And we created Key to the Classics, which is kind of beats mixed with some of my favorite classical pieces. And then I was starting to be asked to tour solo. I didn't actually come here thinking I'd play solo, but it just all started happening.
Yeah.
And I needed the band, so I formed my own band, the Daisy Joplin Band. And the first album we released is called The Healer Within. And it's all about, you know, I mean, it's basically some of music written for me, music from different places around the world. Again, arrangements of classical, but like with a band this time rather than with a beat.
Okay.
And there's a song. So one of the songs on that was Vivaldi's Winter First Movement.
Okay.
And, you know, I ended up doing a reggae version of this. And I think it sounds really awesome. And after having started the band, there were a couple more albums after that. It went from the band to a whole album called Awakening of all of my original music, and then a whole album of arrangements of The Who, who, of course, I'm, you know, completely mad in love with. And then next week, I'm going to start another completely original album with where I'm singing a lot, which is awesome. But anyway, so this, the album called The Healer Within, this Vivaldi, the song that I would love now, you know, for you to play. It's Vivaldi's Winter, yes, with a reggae beat. But since I came to New York, I felt really compelled to start programs for music for kids. So I literally have a foundation, the Daisy Joplin Music Mentorship Foundation, which has been going for 12, nearly 13 years, literally. And we've worked with over 7,000 kids, giving them free music lessons and doing a mentorship project where there's a 50% of the orchestra is professional musicians, and 50% is students, and every student gets to sit next to a professional musician. It's called side-by-side orchestra. And this arrangement that you're going to play now of Vivaldi's Winter First Movement is with the Global Music Academy Orchestra, so an orchestra we formed of amazing professional musicians teaching students. But it sounds like literally as if they're professional. I mean, it's amazing.
Okay. Well, listen, I'll do my little DJ voice here and say solid gold right here. We have got the Vivaldi Winter, and it's by Daisy Joplin. And without further ado, let's play the tape.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I'll tell you
the
something.
The talent. It's the talent.
It is so good. In fact, it was so quick. I thought it was over in 2 seconds. It was so great.
It just flew by.
You have a talent. You really, really do have a talent, Daisy. It's just amazing. And I, you know, for those of you out there, we're going to play another song, obviously. Mm-hmm. But before we do that, I want to make sure everyone knows about your website, okay? I've got daisyjoplin.com. For those just joining, you just missed an incredible, but you got another one coming up. We have got Daisy Joplin on, British classical rock violinist, toured the world and has done an amazing job on this studio right now, basically in front of us. So now, you got all those albums. You've done a great job with that. Tell us a little bit more about the band now, as well as the organization that you formed. Okay, we didn't talk too much about that. So let's talk about
the
that.
The band, which is and I just honestly went for a quite. I have done different arrangements, but a quite kind of standard band setup where I've got a drummer, I've got an electric bass player, and a pianist. We have because we love doing different projects with different styles of music. For example, this year we did a big Irish project in the Hudson Valley Irish Fest. We did a fantastic, it was really fun, fantastic concert with some Irish percussion instruments and tin whistle. Or we've done projects in the Middle East as well, where we've had amazing Middle Eastern percussion instruments or Middle Eastern, flutes and string instruments. So the band has its core of members, and then we add different sounds depending on the project we're doing. So that's the band. And then the Music Mentorship Foundation is an organization. I have to say I'm kind of quite proud of this organization. It's really incredible how we've changed. I feel very honored and rewarded and grateful to have been part of a lot of students, lives, because what music can do for kids is not just it's fun or something. It really changes one's mind. I mean, it's great for math and all kinds of problem solving. And then that, we were talking right at the beginning of our conversation today, what it's like to stand on stage and be a performer. It takes a confidence, and it gives confidence to students when they do that. And we give them these experiences, because my shows, I love to have lighting and projections and something really new. They're going to hear styles of music they probably don't know, and they're going to be playing that music and get to know really different sounds that they might find really inspiring. And we have mentorship programs within all the aspects of putting on a show. So maybe you're a kid who's I want to learn a little bit about the lighting design, or I want a mentorship from literally the stage management or the sound design, so we're opening doors for kids where they would have no idea about this. And we've had, as I say, thousands of kids been through our program so far. Over 7,000. And these are also kids where we've had professional musicians go into school, because a lot of kids, they have an amazing life or whatever, they've got their life, but they don't know what it's like to be in front of an incredible musician playing passionately whatever instrument it is. These kids have never heard a live musician, especially mm-hmm. not right in front of them in their school. And it just can be quite life-changing for them. I've seen it hundreds of times. So we have these opportunities where we bring kids to concerts, where we give concerts to them, and when we have them having free lessons, free workshops in songwriting, for example, and then also performing with amazing world-class musicians.
Wow.
And that program is kind of taking off, and I have big dreams for this program, to take it really onto big stages. We're doing Carnegie Hall at some point, some point soon, within the next year, I just don't know the date yet. And we'll have children's choirs in that concert. And it creates music, which is really uplifting for the audience as well.
Well, that sounds really, really good. And we'll be back with Live on Tape right after these messages. Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeVac can stop these senseless tragedies. And it's so easy to use as well. Simply place the mask over the face and push and pull. You'll never regret having a LifeVac in your home or office. Please visit their website at www.lifevac.net today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFEVAC. That's 877-LIFEVAC. And Welcome back to Live on Tape with Pete Tribuco, and we're in the final segment with Haley, just an amazing person that we are with right now. Of course, a British classical rock violinist, Daisy Joplin's done an amazing job on everything she's done. We just talked about the band and basically what she's doing. And just I want to make sure that we've got this before. We have one more song we want to talk about. And the thing is, I want to make sure we have it. It's Daisy, D-A-I-S-Y. Joplin, joplin.com for any concert information on this an amazing artist. Now we have a second song. Can you tell us about that second song that we're going to be playing, Daisy? I believe you.
Yes.
Real briefly now. Real briefly.
My last name is Joplin, J-O-P-L-I-N-G. I mean, I'm sure if you put in Daisy Joplin without the G, it's going to still come up. But anyway.
Okay.
So one of the incredible projects I got to do recently was to go to Egypt and perform with some quiet megastars, Egyptian megastar musicians, at the Great Pyramids of Giza. So right there, you know, next to Cairo.
Sure.
And we had this arrangement, as I told you, you know, as I said before, like this song is written by me and one of my band musicians who's, he does a lot of work with us. He's not one of the three core people. He is a core person, but he plays percussion. He's Israeli, which is really beautiful, actually, to have this combination, you know, of people from around the world, but especially of that region playing together. You know, there's whatever. And so this was very, very magical and special. So he, Michael Feigenbaum, who wrote the Indian Jesus song with me, and he came up with that name. He said he was inspired by Jesus Christ Superstar, and he was in India at that time writing some music inspired by Indian music. So he kind of, you know, got that name, and it was a very cool groove that he was writing. So he plays percussion. He's an amazing beatboxer. He plays guitar. And he and I wrote this song together. And then we had these wonderful Egyptian musicians adding their sound to it, and it was so cool. And I ended up coming back to the U.S. after I just played in Egypt. I had 16 fans who came to Egypt for my Pyramids concert, but no, tons of them couldn't. And they were like, can I recreate the concert here? So I did last year in New York, recreate. It was called, like, you know, A Radiance at the Great Pyramids of Egypt, recreated, you know, for New York. And we had a lot of fantastic world-class Middle Eastern musicians from around here playing on this song.
Well, I can't.
So I
can't wait to hear it. In fact, you mentioned, of course, Jesus Christ Superstar. We had Ted Neely and Yvonne Elliman here in the studio for their 50th anniversary of Jesus Christ Superstar. So we are looking forward to it.
Wow.
So ladies and gentlemen, again, Indian Jesus by Daisy Joplin.
Yeah, this is a really fun jam. Everybody takes a solo. It's just a lot of fun.
Okay, here we go.
Incredible, Daisy.
Oh my goodness, that was amazing. Again, you know, I tell you,
talent.
It's just so amazing.
And Pete, playing very bad violin for myself personally.
Yes.
Just hearing how it sounds. I'm trying to show you a visual, but when you're holding a violin, sometimes you have to, like, kind of, I guess, vibrate the wrist a little bit, if that makes sense. And it makes, you know, it just sounds really cool on the strings. That was a really bad explanation. But you can just tell the technique that goes into Daisy's performance.
Really? Really? Yeah. Can you get like you know, the tennis elbow? Can you get violin elbow?
I didn't practice long enough for that one. I did a song called Dragon Hunter, and it was very basic, and I retired.
Oh, there you go.
It's so funny. Well, you know, it's interesting that every time I pick up my violin every day, the first thing I do is to play, but kind of as I'm playing, I'm very conscious of being very relaxed in every part of my body, because if you're just focusing on, like you said, Haley, you're holding up the violin, maybe you're focusing on your elbows or your hands, you know, playing the violin, whatever, but you have to be noticing that all of you, maybe your feet, you know, or your legs, whatever, everything's got to be really just in a state of real balance and real relaxedness. So I focus on that, and I have my whole life. But there are absolutely people who get like tensions in their wrists or in their fingers, you know, because it's very specific muscles that are used a lot, you know, which we don't often even use in our everyday life that are needed to play the violin. So, yeah, you have to just, you know, be very relaxed while you play. And that, of course, is the way anyway to let the music just flow through you.
Daisy, I have to ask, at what age did you feel like, and I know what you're going to say, you know, oh, you know, no one actually ever will master this instrument. But at what age did you truly feel like, you know, I could make a career out of playing violin?
Yeah, that is just a great, 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 great question. It was actually a very specific moment when I decided to become a professional musician. Like, you know how sometimes everybody looks at you in a certain way and you don't see it yourself? So people might have assumed that's what I'm going to do. But for me, I was at the Royal College of Music. But, you know, I'd been there 3 years, 2.5 years. But I had, you know, moved to London. I was having a lot of fun. I was playing. And I wasn't just playing music. I was, like, learning how to, I don't know, do philosophy and economics and, like, massage and, like, macrobiotic cooking. Anyway, I was kind of into a lot of stuff. I was in London. I'd have been in the middle of nowhere in my childhood. So yep. I was just having a good time. And my brother came to live in my apartment in London because he was going to study the cello. And after 3 weeks, he said, listen, you're not practicing. If you think you're going to become a professional musician, forget it. You better like either, you know, start working or do something else.
Do they expect you to practice 24/7?
Well, honestly, at the time that you're in music college, I think I'm pretty correct to say if you want to become a professional, especially classical musician, which was, I didn't at that time think there was any other option for me, you've got to be practicing 4 hours a day. Most people will be doing 4 to 6, I mean, pretty much. And I know, you know, Joshua Bell, like I know these amazing classical world-class solo violinists, and they still to this day practice 4 hours every day. Oh. Like to become a classical, you know, the level of technique you need, even to be an amazing orchestra player, like, the, you know, New York Philharmonic. These guys had to practice their asses off. I mean, anyway, so...
Okay,
commitment. But yeah. So I did make the decision to become a, you know, professional musician at that moment. And everything changed for me. Like, I started to get all these concerts and do really well from that moment.
Well, Daisy, I tell you, man, I appreciate it. You've just been an amazing guest. And I really, really love to see you in concert, and we're going to do that. Both you, us and Haley are going to do that. So on behalf of myself and Haley, thank you so much for joining us. And we will talk to you again next week.